The first question, dear Bhante, last night you talked about surrendering or letting things be. How do you reconcile training of letting things be versus your abhishek role of taking change? Thanks, with metta. Yeah, that's a bit of a contradiction. Now, although obviously, you know, trying to reestablish a monastery takes a lot of work and planning. But I always try to remind myself that the change I'm trying to implement, you know, fixing things, building things, it is, you know, it's all subject to laws of impermanence and not self. I can only try to, you know, nudge things in a certain direction. And sometimes they turn out well and sometimes they don't. So just to kind of... you put forth the effort, but to be clear that the result may or may not come. The conditions have to come together, right? And it's not always up to me. And Ajahn Brahm was very right, and he says, you know, when he was a young monk, he thought, when I get to be abbot, I get to do whatever I want to do, just the way I want to do. And that's never the case. When you're, you know, the senior monk, and people come and, you know, build things for you and do things for you. Because it's volunteer, you cannot ask them to do exactly the way they built, the way they want to build. To build the kuchis that they want to build. It's not the way that you want to build, but, you know, that's just the way it is. So as the senior monk, yeah, you just kind of practice lots of letting go, lots of opportunity to practice as a senior monk, actually. Yes. So... the other thing was in terms of, yeah, surrendering. A lot of time it is, you know, you're trained to look at the situation and other conditions are there. And basically, sometimes you can change things, but other times, you know, things go according to the conditions. You know, they just move along. And then that's when you have to practice surrendering to you know, the circumstances. Like I said, you know, with myself being there, basically sometimes you would like a few more monks to come and help out. But usually the monks that you want to come, they don't come. They're very content to stay where they are, the good monks. And the other monks who aren't so restrained, and they want to come because it's a new place. So then you don't always get the monks you want. So or when you want them. When there's lots of things to do, then you need more monk. But as soon as you finish, and everyone has to show up, and they want to stay in the new kutis. So that's always the other case as well. Is that okay? Any questions or comments? Okay. Dear Ajahn, how does the 8 precepts help in meditation? The 8 precepts is a great help, actually, in meditation. Well, first, the first 5 precepts, those are the precepts of, you know, not killing, not stealing, not committing sexual misconduct, not lying, and not taking any intoxicants. They're called the 5 harmless precepts. And they're the basically the essential precepts of any Buddhist. You can't really call yourself a Buddhist if you're not keeping the 5 precepts. And they're also great for training the mind because it's established a foundation of harmlessness, not harming yourself and not harming others. And unless we have this foundation to rest upon, a foundation of pure conduct, bodily conduct, it's very hard to calm the mind. When we sit down, you'll see that these things that we do that are unskillful will come up and to stir the mind, either guilt, remorse, fear. You take things that don't belong to you. You're very fearful that other people might take your things, obviously. You commit, you know, you sleep with someone else's partner, it's all going to come back. So that's the reason for keeping the foundation of harmlessness. And it's very fundamental to any practice to do that. And the last 3 precepts of not eating after 12, not and, you know, indulging in entertainment, or wearing jewelry, or listening to music, reading magazines, and also the not sleeping in high beds, which basically mean not indulging in sleeping. These are called the precepts of restraint. You know, we're here to kind of gather our mind and look inward. And that's why we're not reading and listening to music, because those things tends to bring us outwards to focus on you know, complexity, focus on the excitement of the world. Here we're trying to move, to focus inward. And that's the reason for the eight precepts. And especially the last three, those are mainly to practice to bring your mind towards, you know, simplicity, towards, you know, contentment, fewness of wishes. And they're specially designed for meditation or monasteries. You know, in monasteries, everybody's expected to keep the eight precepts for their conditions. But the last three precepts, there's no kind of morality involved in them. You're not any pure because you eat, you know, in the afternoon. It's just for, you know, simplicity. It's less cooking, less cleaning, not worrying, and also it's light for the body. But I know a lot of people take them in lay life, to keep the eight precepts in lay life. Unless you're meditating, those precepts, you know, it's just not there to kind of gain extra spiritual points. There is a purpose behind the precept. And it's good that we understand when we take them that you know, it's the aim, there's the training behind it. They are, you know, to reflect on. Does that make sense? Any questions or comments? Okay, moving along. Hello, Venerable Kemawaro. I find that when I reach a stage of stillness, that I start to fall asleep. I then jolt back into alertness and start the process all over again. Do you have any suggestions for keeping awake and alert when stillness reaches your meditation? Thank you very much. Yes, the first stage of stillness is I think, when you're still, sometimes the mind becomes a bit too still and there's no awareness. It goes into this kind of space that is still and sort of nice, but there's no clarity. So what we need to do is kind of to nudge the mind towards clarity, either grounded in, you know, the breathing, the mindfulness of the breath, or do the body sweeping. But a lot of time, sometimes people feel an aversion to sleep, you know, to kind of sloth and torpor, and they try to fight it. So you know, it's kind of to investigate that, this space that you're in. Is it because the mind is too peaceful and without any clarity, and that it goes into this kind of space of non-awareness, or just the fact that you're tired and you've been working very hard before coming here, so now that, you know, the body is just catching up, it's, you know, needed rest. So if it's the fact that you're tired, then just allow the mind, you know, to go, allow the body to shut down for a little bit, and then once it's rested, it becomes bright again, and not to worry too much about that. But you find that when you're sitting and it's peaceful, but the mind keeps goes into this kind of dark space where there's not too much clarity, then that's the time to kind of exercise some energy to nudge the mind towards a meditation object. And if it goes here quite often, then there's a point in your meditation that if you're mindful, you can see that, you know, there's a fork in the road. One way goes towards this kind of place of like kind of nothingness, and another one, it goes towards clarity, brightness. And once you see that, then you try to train the mind to kind of nudge towards more clarity. And it's a bit refined, but it's something that you can train your mind towards that. And with anything, practice, and you get better and better at it. So just reflect, you know, when you're, you know, feeling peaceful, and then the mind goes, you know, quiet, 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 Is it, am I tired, or is it just, you know, sloth and torpor? And once you recognize that, then you can take the appropriate action. Yeah, does it make sense? Any questions or comments? Okay. Dear Venerable Kemawaro, in my meditation, I don't have a lot of wholesome thoughts or pleasant feelings. And sometimes when joy or happiness arises, the mind shortens the pleasant feeling and replaces it with unwholesome things. But I notice that a couple of times, if I sit long enough, that manipulator disappears. Should I continue to sit for a long time, or is there anything else useful I can do for myself? Any shortcuts? Thank you. What does it mean when you don't have any lot of wholesome thoughts or pleasant feelings? It means you're sitting there and what, irritation arises, or is there a pain in the body? And the mind shortens the, okay. Or sometimes when joy or happiness arises, the mind shortens the pleasant feeling and replace it with unwholesome things. You notice a couple of times that you sit long enough, these things disappear. And that's the thing as well. When you sit in meditation, main purpose is just to watch. These thoughts come up. Sometimes they're wholesome thoughts, and sometimes they're not. But as long as you keep this kind of middle way of noticing the thoughts, but not getting involved in it, not following the story, or trying to push it away. Says, no, no, I should be meditating, I should be watching my breath, I shouldn't be thinking. But just notice the thought. Like I was saying the other day, that, you know, meditation is the art of focusing. So you put in the middle of your screen of consciousness your meditation object. The breath, could be loving kindness, or the body, sensations in the body. And everything around that could be thoughts about the past, the future, fantasies, irritations, pain in the body. Just leave that on the edge of your consciousness. You don't have to move towards that. If you get involved in the pain in your body, then you move towards the pain already. And that's not good, not necessarily wholesome. But just leave in the middle, just focus that. And eventually, the thoughts that circle around your consciousness, they will fade away. You're not interested in them, they'll fade away naturally. Okay, and that's the thing over time. You won't notice them. In the beginning, there was as you begin to settle down, they'll hover. And sometimes they'll try to come in, but it's okay. Just to maintain your patience, perseverance, and just to focus. But it's kind of this, also the gentle focus, embracing of your breath, or the sensations in the body, and not try to exert too much force as well. And then, and like I said, with anything, it's a delicate balance between exercising too much force onto the object or letting go completely. And, you know, just the mind just thinking and planning, worrying. And with anything, yeah, that's something that, you know, you kind of have to experiment to see how much force you put onto the object without increasing your tension, without making you more tight or intense. And is there any shortcuts? The only shortcuts is patience. This is the shortcut. Just working with your breath and having this kind of ability, having this faith and confidence that, you know, the more you sit, the more you walk, and the more you're open to whatever's happening, and just working with that, the things will begin to go in the right direction. Your mind begin to purify itself, right? It is this inner wanting more. That's the thing to watch for, that, you know, you're not getting very far, you're not sitting long enough, next person to you seems to be doing much better than you are. These are things that to watch for. Because these are the distractions that we have to be careful of. We're here to really develop our own mind. It doesn't matter what the person next to us is doing. And also, things work according to the causes and conditions. When the mind is, is ready to be still, it will settle down on its own. We just have to set in motion the conditions for peace and stillness. We cannot make the mind still, but we can allow it to become still. And wanting, craving, judging, talking to yourself, commenting, those are all the conditions that to stir up the mind. So we're trying to just watch for those things and allow them to fade away naturally on its own. Does that make sense? Any questions or comments? Whoever asked these questions? Yeah? Okay. There was a question during the interview as well. It's like somebody said, what to do about feelings in the stomach? They said, everybody talks about whatever, relaxing the body. But this person says that his stomach feels very tight and tense every time he's watching his breath. I think he watches his breath, he stops breathing. He goes in his stomach. And I think, when that happens, try to go to the body and try to relax that part of your body that's feeling tense first. And then you can go to the breath later. But anytime you feel a tightness or a tension in the body, then it's a good time just to kind of, take a break from your meditation object, either the breath, and try to soothe and calm that body part first. And also it's a good signal that maybe you are concentrating too hard, that you're controlling the breath. And that's the thing I want to mention as well regarding the mindfulness of the breath. The breath should come to you, okay? You shouldn't have to go out there and grab it and find it. If you have to go out there and keep looking for the breath because the mind drifts off, means that the mind is not ready to watch the breath yet. So it's either do some walking meditation, do some mindfulness of the body. You can relax the body first, ground your awareness in your body, and then allow the thoughts to fade away slowly. Then once things calm down, the breath, and according to my experience anyway, should come up very clearly. And once, if the breath stays with you, then okay, it's time, the time is right for you to watch the breath. But it slips off very quickly, then think, okay, maybe I should do something else, some preparation before watching the breath. Okay, so that's a bit, some technique regarding watching the breath. Or like Ajahn Chah said, the breath keep slipping away from you, stop breathing. Hold your breath for 5 minutes, and you'll find it again, he says. Dear Ajahn, what is nimitta? Can you please explain? If one person is getting into nimitta more than one time regularly, would that be the same nimitta that appears or the different one? Or would nimitta appear only first time? Nimitta is a Pali word for the light. So, that appears in the mind when your mind is peaceful. But not necessarily. And there are different types of nimittas. If you read, Ajahn Brahm's books or different books regarding the absorption states, the jhanas, there are different lights that might appear in the mind. Some people, because they're more visual, as soon as they close their eyes, within a few minutes, they could be seeing things. But it doesn't mean necessarily that it comes from peace. It just means some people are more visual. But the true nimittas that appear in the mind are true. The thing to watch for when the light does, appear in your mind is how bright it is and how stable it is. And the thing with anything in regarding meditation is just to watch it with equanimity, with clarity, instead of trying to force it, trying to hold it too tight. It will disappear if you want to. You move towards too quickly, or you watch it with too much craving. These subtle objects of the mind will disappear. So the thing is just to, if it does arise or not arise, it's not the point. A lot of times people get into these technical things, what is the nimitta? What color should I be, you know, be aiming for? Is it the blue one? Is the one that I really made it? If I see the blue nimitta, then I've done something special. I'm trying to usually try to steer people away from those kind of technical aspects of meditation and just to judge your meditation on how you feel when you open your eyes. It's not what you see in, you know, during your meditation, but it's how you feel and what you, you know, outside your meditation. When you open your eyes, and the world is a really beautiful place to be, then it's a good meditation. When your annoying husband seems to be the nicest guy in the world, the most helpful person, the most handsome person you're looking at, then it's a good meditation. Otherwise, the light's not light, you know. If you have a beautiful light, you see, and then you get out, and you still get into fights and arguments, and you get, you know, build up a sense of self that you've done something, you're much better than another person who's sitting there because they haven't seen any light, then it's not really a good meditation. So just to kind of, you know, check the emotional content of your mind after meditation to see, you know, whether you made any progress. You know, you're more easy to get along with, more humble, more helpful, then your meditation is progressing the right way. Right? If one person is getting into nimittas more than one time, whether it be the same nimitta, appear a different one. Nimitta is just a light, like I said, it's not one light, it's just, you know, the mind becomes bright when it when it becomes more still. And different things happen. But no point talking about them because you'll see for yourself. You know, like I said, some people talk to me in great details. For myself, I think it brings up more craving. That we start to look and imagine to see these things in our, you know, meditation. We spend all our time kind of wishing, wanting, you know, pining away for these objects of the mind. And it's not the purpose, really, of meditation. It's to learn from our experience, to know what it feels like when the mind is distracted, to know what it feels like when the mind is still, to know the nature of experience. It's not to attain another subtle, refined experience, right? To understand ourself and reality. That's the reason for meditation. Not to attain anything, not to get anywhere, to be somebody, to be something. If anything, you have good meditation, you can see that it is, you know, if anything, it's to let go, to be less and less, to be nobody, to be nothing. That's why a good mantra to have is nothing to do, nowhere to go. Stay right here. This is where all the truth is. This is where all the nimittas is. This is where all the happiness in the world is, right here. If only we allow the mind to open up. Okay. And final questions, and very fitting. What is the meaning of life? Tucci, do you want to answer this? The meaning of life. One take on that. I think the reason why we're born here over and over again is to find out what exactly the meaning of life is. And one take on that is to know what is happiness and what is suffering. We know what true happiness is. We incline towards that. And the highest happiness is nibbana. So when you achieve that, you know what happiness is. And that's the meaning of life. That was the best reason we'll keep coming back until we get it right, until we let go enough, until we fade away. Let the craving, the wanting, to fade away, that we never come back again. I think that's the meaning of life, one version of anyway. Just to ask ourselves, is this happiness or is this suffering? And we can go through, you know, the Buddha taught there's many types of happiness. There's happiness of the, you know, five sense world, of having things, tasting, touching, happiness of achievement, happiness of relationships. There is some happiness. And for the large part, That's what the world, you know, it's kind of, you know, 99.99% of the world gets off in this happiness. But the Buddha said this happiness is actually not, it's very low on the ladder of different types of happiness, because they're not dependable, right? It's conditioned. Your achievement is conditioned on intelligence and your good health. And when that fades away, those things also go, right? Your good health brings happiness, but as we all know from here, your health only goes one way. As you get older, you don't get healthier, you don't get stronger. It doesn't work that way. And relationships, you know, they're lots of happiness, but you can't, you know, you can't be together forever. It doesn't work that way either. But then there's different sorts of, then there's the happiness of keeping good bodily conduct, moral conduct, that provides a happiness as well. Right? That's a certain level of happiness that you know that, okay, you know, I am doing the best I can, being harmless to myself and other people around me. It's a happiness that, you know, you won't be, you know that people can't blame you or criticize you. And it's also the happiness of restraint, of keeping, you know, of contentment. Happiness of meditation arises higher and higher. Happiness of wisdom, penetrating through what suffering, what happiness is. And then, yeah, then so that's nibbana, enlightenment is ultimate happiness. And obviously, unless we are enlightened, it's hard to know what it feels like. But for myself anyway, you know, I'm meeting monks when I was in Thailand who had reputations of being enlightened. That's the reason why I became a monk. Because I had the happiness of worldly achievements. And yeah, it didn't seem very, very fun. The people, you know, in terms of wealth and, you know, power and achievement, I mean, that's what you kind of crave, you run out, you chase after. But then when you finally, you know, meet these people who are very fabulously wealthy, who are very powerful, and they seem just as confused as everybody else. They seem that also not very content, it's not enough. And lots of fear around these kind of achievements because, you know, they're afraid that, you know, other people might overtake them. So they didn't look to be very very stable. It didn't look so great when you get close to it. But then you meet these monks and nuns in the forest, and they don't have very much. But they have something there because the purity of the mind. They were very happy, very at peace. And they were very, very kind. And then that made me very curious. That what's this thing that they have? You know, and where did it come from? And for myself anyway, they certainly had, you know, what I thought was the happiness of you know, of letting go, the happiness of non-attachment, the happiness of nibbana. And it seems very secure. You know, it's not depending on, you know, their status, not depending on their health, not depending on the relationships they have. They're just naturally happy all the time. So that's the reason why I thought, okay, when I saw the monk sitting in front of me, I was like, okay, I want some of this. And yeah, that's why, you know, I think a lot of people become monks and nuns, because they can see that on some level, you can see that, okay, this is true happiness, something that you can, you know, carry around. And it's also good for yourself and good for other people, because those monks that I met were very kind, and they didn't have their own issues to deal with. So when you sat in front of them, they really had your happiness in mind. How to, you know, kind of help you to practice. So going back to what is the meaning of life, I think it's also, it's a good calling to reflect when you meditate. What is the meaning of life? Why are you here? And to know, maybe it's also slightly different for each and every one of us. When you have a good meditation, also ask yourself that. It's a good time to find out what is the meaning of life. After a good meditation, when the mind is still, what is the meaning of life? Am I here to change the world, I'm here to change myself. And is it one and the same thing? Yeah. So that's the last questions. Any more questions or comments? I think, yes, in terms of whether it's possible to be enlightened or... Yes, generally, the Buddha spoke about it, that there are, in his days, there are householders, he calls it people who have families and you know, jobs and stuff like that. You can attain the first stage of enlightenment. But with anything, you can see that it because of the complications of your life, it is more difficult, not impossible, but more difficult to become enlightened because you know you have to make decisions, you have to very little time to devote to training the mind to practice meditation. So generally it is a longer journey. But if you have patience, you know, what is a few lifetime? Because most of us have been in this kind of rounds of rebirth, you know, for billions and billions of years already. So a few extra lifetime, a few hundred lifetime, it's very short. As long as what's important is that as long as we always incline towards peace and stillness and training the mind. You know, you have a couple of minutes a day, that's all, you know, the conditions allow you, it's okay. You know? And not to, the thing is when you are in a situation, not to yearn or not to kind of develop negativity, because you can't change things anyway. Things can only change slowly. So you happen to have a you know, family and lots of kids, and it's always unrealistic to say that you can you know let them go overnight and okay I'm going to just check in the monastery and forget everybody. It doesn't work that way. You have you know people for your meditation to be stable and to progress your meditation. You have to do it gradually, and you have to behave in a way that doesn't cause remorse, which means you know being responsible. You know, have responsibility and duties to look after. It's only when you fulfill those things that the mind will start to settle down. Yeah. So people who kind of run away from the relationships and stuff like that and end up in the monastery, they don't last very long either because these things come up. And usually you don't have the stability to hold on to a relationship, then usually you don't have the stability to stay in the rows for a long time because it's the same mind that goes from one place to the next and whatever. When you meet suffering, you run away. Right? So if you are in a relationship, then just use that as a practice. Lots of opportunity to practice patience when you're living with other people or living closely with the world. Lots of opportunity to practice generosity, forgiveness, because you know people are always kind of, you know, you get on each other's nerves and things to be done. So definitely, you know, it's a path. And each and every one of us are a path. They're slightly different. So you can't look around and say, well, you know, I wish I was whatever in the monastery and not having to do all these things. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's no pattern. It's more like, you know, it can change very quickly. And that, you know, like, and also your past karma, whatever past deeds you did, may, you know, depends on your spiritual perfections. Like Angulimala is very famous. He's kind of a serial killer. He killed 998 person. And he met the Buddha, had the good karma, met the Buddha, and he also became enlightened in this very life. Yeah. Well, it's a fable story, but it's most Buddhists hold that to be, you know, fairly accurate. And you know, the Buddha, you know, people who met the Buddha and Buddha taught, you know, many people, different kind of economic things, you know, obviously, you know, courtesans and princes and princess, but also beggars and a near mad woman. She lost her kid and became crazy over it. But the Buddha just taught her in a way that she regained her kind of mindfulness and started practicing and became enlightened. So, you know, no matter what our past karma or deeds is, we all have the potential to become enlightened in this very life. If the conditions are right, yes. And we develop lots and lots of, you know, past perfections. You know, like, you know, practice in generosity, practice your moral conduct, your sila, and your, there's 10 kind of different aspects, spiritual qualities that people nourish throughout their lives. Yeah. And the thing is too, these things can come together very quickly as well. So you can, my minute can be, seems like things are very dark and depressing. But sometimes the mind can just open up and let's go, and then things can completely change. And that's the thing is, to hold on to the Buddhist principles of impermanence. Just to, you don't know when your karma might turn around, the situation. As long as you let go, surrender to it. It can change in ways that we cannot predict. So we hold on to things and we kind of become tense and tight around certain issues, then they continue. But once we let go, then things can change. Yeah. Okay. Any questions or comments? Now, I'll say a few words regarding the practice of meditation. Remember, the first and foremost principle of meditation has to be fun, has to be enjoyable. You're not here to, you've got enough suffering in your life already, right? So you're not here to kind of force your body to sit for long, long hours, or your mind to kind of stay with the breath, right? I am from the Thai forest tradition. We're very traditional. Some say it can be fundamentalist. It's probably true. We're very fundamentalist. But the emphasis is on fun. That we learn to kind of do, kind of play with your meditation object. Make it interesting. To engage the mind. And also to keep a watch of not forcing things to happen. You're sitting there and the mind's not doing anything, fine. Go have a cup of coffee, cup of tea, have a walk around. And not just sit there and really grit your teeth and say, I'm not going to move until my mind shut up. That's a path direct to suffering and little else. So you always kind of work with your mind. Just kind of, think, pretend it's a different being. Right? It's not yours. Something you can have some influence over. And something that, we're all intelligent, that find ways to be more effective, with your mind. Find ways that makes it work. When is a good time to meditate? Well, experiment. Is it morning, afternoon, at night? If in the morning you're really drowsy, then say, okay, what can I do to help it along? Some walking meditation, something. So always kind of make sure there's a certain level of happiness already in the mind. One of the sayings the Buddha has is the happy mind becomes still easily. Right? He didn't say a strong mind, a willful mind. He said a happy mind. So just to notice that as well, to establish condition that our mind is bright and happy. And each and every one of us is slightly different what makes us happy. And to always err on the side of generosity. Give yourself the extra biscuit. Give yourself an extra, cup of coffee, extra piece of sweet. You might say, no, I'm still here to be restrain myself. I should be, I should be the restraint one. Eat the least amount, I sit the longest. Sleep the last, my light's always up. Last one to turn off my light. Doesn't work that way. You have here to be kind and gentle. That's when the mind will settle down. You can focus, you can force the mind. That's only done before. lots of people tried it. I myself also tried that. I'm not going to move. The mind is much stronger than our willpower. It's going to move before I move. And like I said, but with anything, do experiment. You try yourself to force the mind, and then you'll see. You can also try the gentle approach of kind of nudging. Okay, maybe mind just, okay, don't have to sit very long. Maybe just 15 minutes and see what happens. If you want to sit more, then we can sit more. But you don't have to. And also, to it's a long day, like lots of hours and hours out there, and you can't watch TV, you can't see the internet, can't talk to your friends. So do things that make you enjoy your experience here. Taking walks in the forest is a very nice way. Walking around, enjoying your time in a peaceful and quiet environment. And kind of play around with that. Do things that brings happiness to yourself, whatever level. And also last time, just reflecting though, that you're here in a quiet place, in the company of, good people who have the intention to purify their mind, who want to do the right thing. So it's a very wholesome environment already. So your job, and that's the nice thing about practice, you don't have to do anything special. You just have to be here. Really, be here and watch your mind. So you don't have to necessarily have to sit and close your eyes to do that. You can do that, at any posture. This way am I, and this is wholesome. Okay. Yeah, just and the thing that's helpful for meditation practice is this kind of incline the mind towards this gratitude and contentment. Whatever's happening, it's good enough. Yes, not the best food you tasted, but it's good enough. May not be the best room you're in, but it's good enough. You don't have the best body, but okay, that's good enough. Just working with existing conditions and looking at the positive things. Because when you are grateful for something, then you don't ask for anything else. The minds become still. Right? It's when you start to fault find, to criticize and become grumpy, then there's things to do. Because you're not happy with the food, and you have to think, tomorrow, maybe I've got to go in the kitchen and teach them how to cook. Or maybe I have to show them how to build a proper hut. It's too noisy here. Why is the aircon on? I got to go tell somebody to turn that aircon off. But if you're grateful for things around, then you don't have to do. The mind becomes more still, easier. And so it's easy, it helps to get along in the community to give people the benefit of the doubt that people are doing the best they can. And with that, you'll see the gratitude and contentment, mind can become more still, becomes brighter, and it's easier to watch the breath. If you have a fault-finding mind, you're irritated, angry, which also, because we are not enlightened, to also accept that our minds will go into dark spaces and it gets grumpy every so often. But just recognize that, some people, this kind of double dosa. They get angry, and then they angry themselves for being angry. So it gets very complicated with our modern minds. So first, you do see negative states of mind in yourself. First, to accept that. Yes, I'm not enlightened. I get grumpy, get moody from time to time. That's okay. But then try as best as we can to steer the mind towards wholesome states. You're looking for the positive things in your experience, in other people. And then the mind has more energy. It's easier to meditate. And that's the reason a lot of the meditation teachers advise people to teach these kind of, do the preparation. People with pure heart, pure mind, get good meditation. And you can see that once you meditate long enough. It's very simple. Because it has the energy, the stillness already there. People who are grumpy, mean, obnoxious, they don't get good meditation. See, so there's justice in the world. No. The nice guys do finish first. But something for each and every one of us, to work towards, and that we can. So those are the few words that I offer for your reflections tonight regarding meditations. Any other questions or comments? Okay, very good. Continue sitting, or we can call it a night. Okay.